It's Wednesday, December 7th. It was a runoff until it was a walk-off. We start here.
The people have spoken.
For the second time in a month, for the second runoff in 2 years, Reverend Raphael Warnock wins Georgia's Senate seat.
It suggests that there's a party that is on the rise in not just Georgia, but other parts throughout the South and throughout the West.
What the Democrats' win and Herschel Walker's loss mean for the national picture. Former President Trump is not a convicted felon, but now his company is.
A lot of companies have internal policies that prevent them from doing business with felons.
We'll break down the new verdict against the Trump Organization. And there's only one Kanye West, but there's a growing number of people speaking like him.
I don't think I've ever seen anti-Semitism this overt, not being immediately denounced from every corner.
Why Jewish American groups are sounding the alarm. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. Let's be clear. Democrats did not need to win the runoff election last night. They would control the Senate either way. And even though it helps with committees and such, 51 votes is not a necessity when your party controls the White House. But the reason Democrats really wanted to win this race is because of where it was taking place.
Georgia, let me start with two simple words. Thank you.
Georgia hadn't voted for a Democratic presidential candidate nearly three decades until 2020, when Joe Biden won. It hadn't voted for a Democratic senator in over 20 years. Then it recently voted in two of them.
In 2021, it sent its first African-American senator and its first Jewish senator to the United States Senate in one fell swoop.
If Raphael Warnock was able to win a full six-year term, it would be a sign that 2020 wasn't a blip, wasn't a one-off. It would mean Georgia is officially up for grabs.
All right, we do have some breaking news. ABC News can now project that Senator Raphael Warnock will reclaim his seat.
Well, as the votes came in, it became clear that Warnock wasn't just equaling his November margins, he was bettering them. And around 11 p.m. last night, his opponent, Herschel Walker, conceded defeat. Let's go straight to ABC's political director, Rick Klein, who was watching these results come in overnight. Rick, how decisive was this?
Yeah, this isn't a blowout. And Herschel Walker came within a point of besting Raphael Warnock the first time around. And this margin isn't going to be that much bigger when all the votes are counted. Lots of red places voted pretty red. The bluer places voted pretty blue. We saw a lot of really interesting numbers just around the margins of Raphael Warnock doing a little bit better than he did the first time.
The people have spoken.
But it wasn't like he blew him out of the water, which to some people might be surprising, given how flawed a candidate Herschel Walker is, all the noise and distractions from Donald Trump, the massive spending advantage, the history of turnout.
So I want to thank all of you as well, because there's no excuses in life. And I'm not going to make any excuses now, because we put up one heck of a fight.
Democrats had a lot in their favor. Ultimately, they probably stayed up a little bit later than they would have liked to on this runoff election night.
The question wasn't, I guess, would voters change their minds 28 days after the previous election? The question was which voters would show up. Are you basically saying a lot of them did from both parties? What did we learn about the voters here?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think there was every reason to think that people might be a little bit disengaged because the control of the Senate wasn't involved, and Republicans in particular were disappointed with the outcome. But we saw very big numbers of voters.
How long did you wait in line today, Janet?
I waited not quite 2 hours.
We saw record early turnout and then overall record turnout for a midterm runoff race. And that meant Democrats and Republicans both showing up in big numbers.
So I voted for Herschel.
Tell me why.
Happy to support him. I think it's important to have the 50-50 split in the Senate.
I feel like I trust Mr. Warnock much more significantly than his opponent.
What do you make of Herschel Walker?
He's a joke.
I was looking at some of those suburban counties in and around Atlanta, places that traditionally have been a little more Republican, trending toward the Democrats. And that's where you saw Raphael Warnock slightly outperform his numbers from last time around, but only slightly. And it was striking how many places across the state voted almost exactly the same as they did a month earlier.
We are going to finish first one more time. Are you ready?
You're right. No one's changing their minds, but the same kind of voters showed up. And it just might be another reminder that, you know, we're in an age where everyone is so hyper-tuned into politics that low turnout elections for either side may be a thing of the past.
Wow. And I guess I'm wondering then, for each party, what message does this send to the national Democrats, to the national Republicans? What are they thinking about this morning in Washington?
I mean, Democrats are thrilled to be able to win a third seat in just the space of 2 years, three times winning in a state that they almost never have been competitive in recent decades. It suggests that there's a party that is on the rise in not just Georgia, but other parts throughout the South and throughout the West. And there's lots of opportunities that start to open themselves up if you can start to flip states like Georgia. For the Republicans, look, this is a huge disappointment. The idea that they came in with all the historic advantages of a president's first midterm, with double-digit inflation, with President Biden's approval rating where it was, and were unable to defeat a single Democratic incumbent senator or win any seat that was previously held by the Democrats in the Senate. The only flipped seat was the Republicans losing a seat that they held in Pennsylvania, is kind of an unthinkable outcome coming into the cycle. Democrats really needed an inside straight to be able to hold the Senate, and they got that, and then they got the cherry on top of the additional seat to be at 51-49. That is pretty wild, and it's going to prompt a lot of Republicans to ask what happened with the National Republican Senatorial Committee under Senator Rick Scott. What happened with people like Mitch McConnell, who did allow Herschel Walker to romp through the nominating process, and of course, the influence of Donald Trump.
One of the greatest athletes in America, and I know he will go down also as one of the greatest senators in America.
This was a big loss for Trump in a state where he has had a losing record in the past. Herschel Walker would never have run for office, period, full stop, if not for his friendship with Donald Trump.
Well, I tell you what, can you not tell this man loved the United States of America?
And the idea that he went out there and lost when so many other Republicans could have won is something that's going to haunt this party for a long time.
Last question for you, Rick. Practically, I guess, starting January 1st, what is this? What is the 51st seat for Democrats? Does that functionally mean anything in the new year?
It means they can, in any committee, get anything they want without needing any Republican cooperation. It means that they could potentially lose Joe Manchin for a vote here or there. President Manchin's era is over. His term has ended with this, because you could potentially work without a Democrat. You could isolate any individual Democrat in any individual vote. And it gives them a little bit of a buffer in future election cycles. Looking down the road to 2024, they have to defend, the Democrats do, seats in West Virginia, Joe Manchin's seat, as well as Montana and Ohio. So going in at 50-50 would be very difficult. Going in at 51-49, that is a different scenario. In the tightest of tight margins, that one seat makes a difference.
Yeah, and you think about shifting demographics, too, in a state like Georgia. It happened in Virginia 10 years ago,
yeah,
where Democrats started picking up seats. It became purple. And then the demographics of the state just kept shifting, where it became easier and easier and easier. Eventually, it was just considered a blue state. Now, Democrats wondering if Georgia flipping even faster than they had hoped. Rick Klein, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brad.
With the midterm elections officially behind us now, all eyes are about to turn to this next Congress and, of course, the 2024 presidential election.
Part of the beauty of me is that I'm very rich.
Donald Trump's successful 2016 run was largely based on his business prowess. This guy in charge of a successful corporation saying he would run government in the same way. Now he's a former president, and yesterday a jury in a New York state court said his business has committed tax fraud.
This was a case about lying and cheating.
The Trump Organization has been found guilty. Let's go to ABC senior investigative reporter Aaron Katursky, who is in the courtroom for all this. In fact, Aaron, it sounds like you're outside the courthouse right now. Can you just walk me through this trial and what the jury found here?
The jury convicted the Trump Organization on all 17 counts that it faced, including a scheme to defraud. Brad, let me give you one example from the trial. Picture the 26th floor of Trump Tower there on Fifth Avenue. Donald Trump's in his office, and Alan Weisselberg walks in, and Trump is signing checks, and he's grousing about signing checks, and he says, checks for his grandkids to go to a ritzy private school on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And he looks at Weisselberg and says, I might as well pay for your grandkids, too. And that was all Weisselberg needed to hear. It ended up that the Trump Organization started paying for Weisselberg's grandkids to go to the same private school as Trump's grandkids. And the company also paid his rent. They paid for his Mercedes-Benz. They paid for furniture for his Florida home. They made extra cash available at Christmas time.
You used an apartment because you need an apartment because you have to travel too far where your house is. You didn't pay tax. Or education for your grandchildren. I don't even know. Do you have to? But does anybody know the answer to that stuff?
None of that was declared as income. And the jury's verdict held the company liable for the conduct of its top executives.
What are the consequences of all this, Aaron? Because a company can't go to jail, right? Like, does anyone go to jail for stuff like this?
Nobody goes to jail. You cannot jail a company. You're right, Brad. But there is a nominal fine, $1.7 million in total fines that the company is facing when sentencing is scheduled for January 13th.
We'll certainly be appealing, of course.
But I think there's more collateral consequences here, Brad, that are important to remember. Maybe banks will start calling in loans, or business partners of the Trump Organization will cancel contracts, because a lot of companies have internal policies that prevent them from doing business with felons.
Basically, the issue of the fact that they've been convicted of a crime, so it may be harder for them to get financing, and it does affect their reputation.
And now, former President Trump's company that he made the centerpiece of his career and rode all the way to the White House is effectively a convicted felon.
Would the company go away, or does the company stay in business? How does that work?
Well, the company is still in business, although the Attorney General of New York has a separate civil case that is seeking to perhaps curtail the company's operations. That's still a ways away, and Trump could always move it out of New York, maybe bring it to Florida where he lives. But the company is still viable. Now, whether anyone wants to do business with it is another question.
Well, and I'm wondering what this means for Trump personally, right? Like what it means for the 2024 election. Because if people are already wondering, you know, will Trump be under federal investigation? I mean, if this verdict holds, and it is under appeal, but if this verdict holds, will he have the title of fraudster now just draped around his neck?
At least his company, right. And though Trump was not charged, the trial really did pierce his image that he's carefully honed over the years as a successful businessman.
So the total is $8,737,540,000. Now, I'm not doing that to brag, because you know what? I don't have to brag. I don't have to, believe it or not. I'm doing that to say that that's the kind of thinking our country needs.
Remember, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office fought to the Supreme Court twice to get access to Trump's tax returns. And they showed some of them in court, revealing a string of losses over a 10-year period, including 2 years, 2009 and 2010, when Trump lost nearly $1 billion. And that may cut against the kind of image that he hopes to hone once again as he seeks a new run for the presidency.
All right, Aaron Katursky there outside the courthouse in Lower Manhattan. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, there are politicians, then there's how everyone else is talking. But hate speech experts are worried that more people are talking a lot like Kanye West. We're back in a bit. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. Yesterday, the rapper formerly known as Kanye West made another appearance on a far-right media outlet. Once again, Ye was sitting alongside the avowed racist Nick Fuentes. The pair were talking to the founder of the Proud Boys, and once again, Ye defended Hitler. To many people, this is easy to write off, right? It's a guy who says he's running for president while wearing a full face mask, like a ski mask, talking about making Jews work for Christians and installing cameras in the Jews' homes. But Ye is still very much a leading figure. Billboard named him the top performing gospel artist of 2022 and the top male Christian artist overall. And amid all this, the Anti-Defamation League is reporting more anti-Semitic attacks than any time in recent history. Let's talk to Marae Silkoff. She's a writer who recently published a New York Times Magazine essay on this unsettling trend. Marae, let's just start with sort of what your take was as these comments from Kanye West started bouncing around.
Well, I'm 49 years old, and in my entire life of living as a Jew in North America, I don't think I've ever seen anti-Semitism this overt in the middle of the mainstream, not being immediately denounced from every corner. And there were the big talking points in the last couple of weeks of Kanye and then Kyrie Irving, the basketball player who had posted a link to a film that had a very anti-Semitic message and Holocaust denial.
I just want to offer my deep apologies to all those who are impacted over these last few weeks, specifically my Jewish relatives, my Black relatives, all races and cultures.
And then there was Dave Chappelle on SNL.
Early in my career, I learned that there are two words in the English language that you should never say together in sequence. And those words are the and Jews.
With this very controversial Saturday Night Live monologue where he was kind of saying, well, Kanye was wrong for saying what he said, but don't the Jews kind of control everything? Like, it was this genius Dave Chappelle tightrope walk between saying the unsayable and actually getting away with it.
It shouldn't be this scary to talk about anything. It's making my job incredibly difficult. And to be honest with you, I'm getting sick of talking to a crowd like this. I love you to death. And I thank you for your support. And I hope they don't take anything away from me. Whoever they are.
But at the same time, it left a lot of Jews feeling pretty unprotected by the media. They are said to be controlling. So it was a tough week. And I think there have been various reactions, but one major reaction has been nobody quite knows what to do. Mm. You know, there's problems on the left, there's problems on the right when it comes to anti-Semitism, how to deal with it. But right now, I'd say that a lot of Jews feel a little bit like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If you call out anti-Semitism and there are consequences for somebody who's a big celebrity like Kanye West, sometimes there's this backlash, which is, you see, I got all these consequences. Jews really do control everything.
Like, it feeds that false narrative.
Yes. And if you don't do anything and you just kind of sit there, then there's the fear that this is just going to go on and on and on, and you're just sitting there like a sitting duck watching. So I'd say it's a pretty uncomfortable moment, and not to use too many cliches, but a Pandora's box has been opened, and it doesn't seem to be shutting anytime soon.
Well, and the Anti-Defamation League had that same response to the Chappelle monologue, that this is not a stroke of genius, this is not speaking truth to power. They say this sort of language normalizes anti-Semitism. And let's talk about some of that language, Murray, because it takes a lot to make the leader of the Proud Boys uncomfortable. But here you had Kanye West saying Hitler got a bad reputation because of the Jews, to which even the far right guy talking to him is like, well, killing all those Jews probably had something to do with it. Like, are there these people that are often towing the line on language? And what happens when Kanye West goes even further with that language?
Well, I mean, Kanye's kind of gone over the edge at this point by saying things like he loves Hitler and Nazis are great, right? So he's just gone into full frontal hate at this point, and he's left all codedness aside. But before he was saying that he admired Hitler, he was saying things which I think are more worthy of unpacking. So there's a lot of talk about they and them and the people in power and the people in control, and you know who I'm talking about, and a lot of talk about banks and the people who control the media. And, you know, I'm not going to say who it is, but you all know who I'm talking about. And so I feel like that coded language, which everybody knows these people are talking about Jews, is a little bit more insidious than somebody coming out and being like, hey, I love Nazis and Hitler's great, you know, to which Alex Jones might be like, whoa, now you're going too far, man, because the other stuff kind of unleashes what you might call unspoken anti-Semitism. Mm. So in a way, I'd be happy if all the people who use the language of they and them and the banks and the people who control everything to just come out and use the language of Jews and Nazis and Hitler and all the rest of it. It would make things a lot easier.
Well, and you've said it's not necessarily just an issue within the far right, right? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, as somebody who does identify as a leftist Jew who comes from a long line of socialist Jews and union leaders and all that sort of thing, you know, there's a lot of conflation right now with anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, and there's a lot of Jews on the left right now who are either choosing to or needing to distance themselves from Israel. College campuses is a great example, you know, especially if you look at what's happened recently in Berkeley, where Jews are being asked whether they support Israel or not in order to be part of certain aspects of student life. So that's new.
Oh, like if you support Israel, that must mean that you're a hateful person. We don't want you here. Still ends up being the message, even if it's coming from a progressive.
Yes, and this problematic conflation with, you know, what it means to be an American Jew. Mm. There's this thinking in the progressive movement in a way that if you make too much trouble with your Judaism, it's kind of bad for the cause. Mm. So, you know, on the progressive left, for anti-Black racism, you know, we want to be against that. And in a way, you don't want to come out and be squeaking about, oh, and also anti-Semitism. And I feel like I'm under duress now as well. So, you know, it's an uncomfortable place to speak out against anti-Semitism from. Mm. And then on the right, you've got a lot of American Jews who, in order to support Israel, are kind of in bed with far-right people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, right, who, you know, is an overt anti-Semite, but these people just happen to support Israel for, you know, reasons not having very much to do with Jews. So there's two issues, one very much on the left and one very much on the right in terms of why Jews today in America might have a hard time speaking out against anti-Semitism. I think right now there is no choice. We have to figure out a way to come together. We have to figure out a way to speak out against this stuff. Maybe it's a new way. I actually don't have the answer. I just know that we are very much in a new era, and a lot of us are feeling it, and it's a bit scary.
All right, really interesting. Murray Silkoff, thank you so much. Really appreciate the time.
Thank you so much.
All right, one more quick break. When we come back, all you French wine aficionados might have to put a cork in it soon. One last thing is next.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing, something I thought I'd never be asking, could Britain be home to the world's next great winery? If you know anything about wine, you know that in general, Spain is good, Italy is good, France is very good, the Mediterranean climate is just très bon. When you ask wine snobs about Britain, they'd say, the beer can be nice, but here's the thing, as the earth warms, what we consider a Mediterranean climate is moving further and further north.
Britain, for the first time in history, now under an extreme heat warning.
And we all go on holiday to places with temperatures like this.
This summer, while Londoners were panicking over skyrocketing temperatures,
I think I'm going to just try and stay indoors as much as I can in the office.
Vintners out in the countryside were ready to work. Wines like Pinot Noir thrive on scorching heat during the daytime. Just this week, a new peer-reviewed study came out in the wine journal Uno One. Yes, winemakers are apparently big on science journals, saying climate change is slowly making Britain into a haven for wines like Pinot, Riesling, and now Chardonnay, which were nearly impossible to make just a few decades ago.
I've worked as a climate scientist for 30 years. The things we're predicting back then are now starting to come true.
As you might expect, that means further south, in some parts of France, it's getting too hot. You have to pick the grapes before they turn into raisins, and that means they don't develop as much flavor. That's not lost on the big French vineyards. So in recent years, you've seen wine barons buying up huge tracts of land in the UK, and the champagne maker, Tétanger, plans on making its first British sparkling wine within the next few years. But that's the problem. Winemaking takes time. Years of work goes into a single vintage. Experiments can last decades. If the climate keeps changing at this pace, vintners will just move from Britain on to Norway. A blooming industry will never have time to put down roots. This is all affecting where boxed wines are made. Like, that's what would really affect me if that had to migrate somehow. These episodes keep getting better with age, of course. But if you want that fresh bouquet every morning, hit that follow button on your smartphone, subscribe to Start Here, and you will satisfy your news palate. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.